Job continued his parable. We've not been told that chapter 28 and the chapter on wisdom, where shall it be found, is a parable, but it certainly is. And it's picture language of the highest quality. And this chapter is also full of picture language. The Lord Jesus spoke in parables, as you know. The parables were not so much a simple story, because parables were designed according to Isaiah, and Jesus quoted Isaiah, so that those who were blind should not see, rather than it should make things clearer for them. But the pictures are so clear. So Job continues his parable, and he says, "Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me." I don't wish I was young again. Think of all those exam papers I'd have to do. We tend to put a rosy complexion upon things of the past. We tend to think of the time when we brought up our children as glory days. But a perspective on that tells you that most days there were miseries, and most days somebody was in tears. Sometimes there was a loss of discipline to be undergone. Sometimes school reports weren't well. And the time of educating our children was a hard work. But of course it was good. We loved our children. All I'm trying to illustrate is that when we look back, we tend to make out it was actually better than it was. Better than it was. And we mustn't fall into that trap. And I say that in particular because as we get older, you tend to think that the old days were better. If the old days were better, that's fine. But it mustn't be that we see them to be so because we're getting old. It may be that we live in the most exciting of days. We certainly, in one sense, as a generation, live in better days than many of our forefathers. We can travel much more. We can go to places much more. I remember talking to the mother of a lad who was in hospital when I first came to Alborough. And the lad whose mother I was talking to was in the next bed to the child I was visiting. And they lived in Bedfield, which is just near Elsham. And she said, she'd come up to Ipswich from Bedfield, she said that her father had never been to Ipswich, never seen the sea, but used to go to Framlingham Market, and that would take him all day to get there and to sell his goods, and he'd come back the next day. We don't reckon to have even begun our journey when we've got an hour past Framlingham. We do live in better days in some ways, don't we? All I'm saying is that we must bless the Lord for what we've got, where we are now, what we're doing now. Ask for strength for today. Now, in a way, Job was not at fault here. And he's got a whole paragraph here, a whole chapter, designed to teach us that we must accept what God is leading us into now. Now, it is possible when we're thinking of the past to make a misjudgment. And he makes a very bad misjudgment in this verse. "Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me." Oh, now that's different, isn't it? Does he mean that God isn't preserving him now? I don't think he really means that. I think he really means that God has allowed him to have this terrible affliction. But you see how easy it would be to backslide. How easy it would be to say, "Well, God isn't looking after me now like he did." And that's blaming God for something that isn't altogether true. Now, there were wonderful days that Job is going to describe in this chapter, and I'm going to try and spell them out to you. But what we know is that he has been promoted. He has been elevated. the days that he's going through now were a personal proof to Satan that he would not curse God. That's what's required. So the reason that these things have happened to him, he doesn't know why. He will know, and he will be rewarded. But at this stage he doesn't know why. But we know that it was a much more serious business. Everybody brings up children. Not everybody has the elevated status that he had there in life, but many kings have had that status. But almost he alone, other than Christ, has the particular thing that he was required to do before God. When we go through difficult troubles, we must not think God is no longer preserving it. God is no longer looking after us. God no longer cares for us. What is happening is that we are on a much higher, elevated task now. Brought up our family, maybe. Maybe we're in the middle of it. But we've got something rarer, something the Lord has called us to accomplish and to rise victorious over before the weight of our affliction is turned into an exceeding weight of glory. So it's not true that God didn't preserve him at this stage compared with what had happened before. But you understand what he meant when it was obvious that God was preserving him. It would have been easy to lose faith. When his candle shined upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness. Such dark experiences as he had, though he doesn't illustrate them in this chapter, he was able to walk through in the light of his fellowship with the Lord. What he was going through now, he didn't find quite so promising. But the greater the darkness, the greater the light that we may seek from the Saviour. As I was in the days of my youth, when the secret of God was upon my tabernacle. Youth is not quite what we would call youth, because his children are about him. I think we're to think of up to 30. And when the secret of God, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High, shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. And the secret of God seems to him to have been removed. He doesn't seem to have that special favour, that special intimacy, just at this time. When he was younger and everything went well. But it's very, very intriguing. If we turn back without losing the place to Job chapter 4, Eliphaz, his first reply to Job, verse 3. Behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hand. Thy words have upholding him that was fallen, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. But now it is come upon thee, and thou faintest. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. Is this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the uprightness of thy ways? And so, when he says, when the secret of God was upon my temple, when the Almighty was yet with me, he means to express that he feels that the Lord has withdrawn. And he is open, isn't he? He is open to that criticism of Eliphaz. It must have hurt him very much. And it wasn't a fair one, but he must have felt it. And you see this in the end of verse 5. Whereas the end of verse 2 indicates that he's lacked faith a little, as in the days when God preserved me, the last expression in verse 5 is really good. When the Almighty was yet with me, I wonder if he burst out into tears when my children were around me. Because we read in Job chapter 1, do you remember? While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. That's probably a servant. No mention is made of the daughters. They were there as well. The implication is that none of them survived. So this is a hard verse, isn't it? Oh, that I was as in months past, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were about me. So we're really going to the springs of life here. This is something that, if we can learn this, this is dealing with big, big, deep, vast issues. This is nothing sentimental, this is nothing superfluous. This is right, goes to the depth of our character and our personality. When I washed my steps with butter. Now, you remember that the Promised Land was a place of butter and honey. We don't wash steps with butter. I remember people used to scrub their steps with whiteners and things when I was a boy. They don't do that much now either. But that's not the type of step that's meant. He simply means when I stepped out, everything was right. Everything worked together for good. Everything was fruitful. When I washed my steps with butter, there was an abundance. And the rock poured me out rivers of oil. Even the hard places, even the places which were sparse, even the places that were dry, in his case, poured out wealth, good things. When I went out to the gate through the city, when I prepared my seat in the street. Now, if you can keep the place, and if we can turn to Genesis 36, just to recap what I taught you right at the beginning. Now, you remember Genesis 36, that among the sons of Esau, and it's his descendants that are called Edomites, which means red, came from the red soup, you remember. But do you remember that the leaders of each city, the nobles, were called dukes? And duke with us, it's an attempt to translate that particular word, a high ranking, it's the most high ranking of all the things, higher than earls, I think, and other things. The duke is the next to the monarch, and the highest ranking. So the dukes were the sons of Esau. But if you look at verse 15 of Genesis 36, these were dukes of the sons of Esau. Okay. But you turn to verse 31 and you read, these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any king over the children of Israel. And you get this picture that each area had a duke. And if he died, another duke took his place. It looks as if one of those dukes was elected king for life. And when he died, there was another election. Because when the king dies, the next king is not from the same place, nor the same family. And you remember we're saying that Jobab, the most likely explanation of who Job is that he's the Jobab here. The Greek translation suggests that that is so, and that's there's nothing better to substitute if he's not this person. So we read at verse 31, and these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any king over the children of Israel. And Bela, the son of Beor reigned in Eden. You see, the whole era. And the name of his city was Dinhaba. And Bela died, and Jobab, that is possibly Job, the son of Zerah of Bozra, reigned in his stead. And Jobab died, and Hushim of the land of Temani, the same as Eliphaz a Temanite, you remember, reigned in his stead. And Husham died, and Hadad, the son of Bedad, who smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead. And the name of his city was Abith. All I wanted at this stage to try and explain was that if Job is Jobab, what he's recalling in this chapter is his early appointment, even as a youth, to the rule over Edom. And if you look at verse 25, just glance, we're not going there now, but we're back to Job 29. If you look at verse 25, I chose out their way, I sat chief, and dwelt as a king in the army. Okay? That may well be an allusion to his status. Now, I want you to grasp that, because he's now going to say, when I went out to the gate through the city. Now, the gate is where all the justice was dispensed, all the legal matters were done. Everything, every case was heard. And the sort of thing that he's describing cannot be just, if you like, his own town, Bozra's justice, because the nobles wouldn't be there, the princes wouldn't be there, it would be just, he would be just dispensing justice there. This looks as if what he's describing is a national court of justice held in his own city. And then that begins to make sense. When I wish it was like it was, you see. When I went out to the gate through the city. Incidentally, if he is Jobab, it's not until he dies that he's replaced. So though he may feel he's not dispensing his work now, I think a bit like Nebuchadnezzar, it looks as if the thing was reserved for him, and he would have got it back again when the Lord blessed him again. The young men saw me and hid themselves. Well, he was one of the young men. Why would they hide themselves? Well, they would hide themselves because they have a guilty conscience. And let me just very, very quickly just read to you Romans 13, the first few verses, just to remind you of what his status was and why even the young men, otherwise his equals, would have hid themselves from them. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou not then be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. So the young men hid themselves, they have guilty consciences. The aged arose and stood up. Why would the aged rise in the presence of a young man? They would be acknowledging not him personally, but his office, wouldn't they? The princes refrained talking and laid their hands on their mouth. Well, I'm going to make a distinction between princes and nobles. I'm not sure whether that's right. I'm going to suggest to you that the princes mentioned here are the dukes of each of the towns. They'd all gathered, you see, and when he comes to take his position as judge, dispensing justice, they all stop talking. They've all been talking. Sort of like you in church before we start, you know. You've all been talking. So, when he arrives, they stop. They lay their hands on their mouth. They look at each other and say, the nobles held their peace. Now, who was more noble than the princes, whichever way around it was? I suggest that these may have been the direct and immediate descendants of Esau through Eliphaz. In other words, you've got, on the one hand, the appointed leaders of each city. On the other hand, you've got the direct descendants of Esau. Which way around? It may be the princes of those, and the others are the nobles. But I think you've got these two categories of the distinguished people of Edom. And even in that great gathering, they all conferred respect upon Job. They'd voted him into office, no doubt. When the ear heard me, then it blessed me. And when the eye saw me, it gave witness to me. Why? Because he delivered justice. And of course, in the very, very famous words of 1 Samuel 23, it was such a lovely morning this morning when I was preparing this, I couldn't help but think of it. Sorry, 2 Samuel 23. I can't quote from memory because I'm never good, but I'll read it to you. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God, and he shall be as the light of the morning, when the sun riseth, even a morning without clouds, as the tender grass, springing out of the earth by clear shining after rain. What a wonderful day is dawning. And the future of that land, where there is that sort of justice, it knows no bounds. It smells nice. Everybody's looking forward to going out, getting on with the things they have to do. And this is what's being described here, except that this is earlier than what we've just read. Why was I blessed? Why was the witness to me spot on? Because I delivered the poor that cried, and the fatherless, and him that had none to help him. You see the love in which he was held in the immersion. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me. Oh, thank you! Because he gave judgment in favour against the persecutors. You see? Thank you! I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. She may have said thank you, but the widow had been so sad ever since losing her husband and with nobody to provide. He made provision out of the court, and so she went whistling or singing. Her heart sang anyway, even if she didn't. But you got the picture, haven't you? I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My judgment was as a robe and a diadem. When I dispensed justice, it was in accordance with my responsibility as a judge. A robe, a diadem, as a king. But with privilege goes responsibility. And I exercised that responsibility. I was eyes to the blind, and feet was I to the lame. I provided somebody to a child or a granddaughter, I provided the money so that somebody could be employed, perhaps, to go about with the blind person and to help carry the lame. I was a father to the poor, and the cause which I knew not I searched out. This is wonderful stuff. He adjourned the case hearing. He wasn't going to go on hearsay. We'll readjourn, we'll reassemble in 2 weeks' time, and I will make personal investigation to find out all the detail. That level of justice. I break the jaws of the wicked and pluck the spoil out of his teeth. So, if there was corporate sin, gangs, or individual men committed to sin, he broke the spell. And you know that when you've got these great cartels, murder people and do things, that's not an easy thing to take them on, but he says he did. and he plucked the spoil out of his teeth, so that people need no longer live in fear of being attacked, burgled, raped, whatever it was. But when he went home each night, he thought, this is lovely. No, no, I'm thinking it's lovely. It's wonderful when the Lord blesses in that sort of a way and gives a man that privileged responsibility. The Lord has removed it, not because there wasn't anything right with it, but because he has a higher thing that he is doing in his court against Satan. And because we have read this Job, be Job, that he was only replaced when he died, we know that this was only a temporary suspension. He will get it back. But what went wrong was, when he went home, he said, I shall die in my nest. He's going to go on and on and on like this. It's lovely. Well, yeah, it is. But these things don't always go on and continue without intermission. And that was what happened in Psalm 30, wasn't it? David hadn't learned the lesson, even though he had access probably to the book of Job, but he hadn't learned that lesson. In Psalm 30, do you remember? In my prosperity, I said, I shall never be moved. It's going to go on forever. Nothing's ever going to change this. But it was pride, complacency. And he had to learn that it was by the grace of the Lord, the favour of the Lord, the constant sustaining of the Lord, that these wonderful things were to happen. It's wonderful to have good times, good spiritual times, good times at all, but they won't go on forever. We do well when we praise the Lord for each day and each thing, express our appreciation, but acknowledge that we don't deserve them, and if it pleased the Lord to send something different, we wouldn't complain. Then I said, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root was spread out by the waters, and the dew lay all night upon my branch. My glory was fresh in me, my bow was renewed in my hand. What picture language? Nest, sands, root, waters, dew, branch, fresh glory. What a wonderful picture. But all of abundance. All the good things about nature. My root was spread out, and the dew was distilled. Everything from God. My glory was fresh in me. David talks about his glory. And it simply means that his status, his standing, was unopposed, was being fully, his responsibility was being fully exercised, and it felt fresh. He felt that the wisdom of the Lord was helping him. Unto me men gave ear, and waited, and kept silence at my counsel. After my words they spake not again. His decision was final, and he gave the best argument. My speech dropped, distilled upon them. They waited for me as for the rain. They wanted to hear what I had to say. It would guide and govern them. They opened their mouth wide as for the latter rain. Open thy mouth wide, says the psalm, and I will fill it. If I laughed on them, they believed it not. That's fascinating, isn't it? If I laughed on them, they believed it not. Viv's dad, when we were on holiday in Inverness, was standing with Viv's mum, and we were there too, and the Queen stopped as she was going by along the streets, probably thought she got an Inverness local that spoke to this rampant trade unionist that was Viv's dad. And ever afterwards he was pro-royalty. Ever afterwards he talked to that scene. And that's what you've got here. That's the sort of thing you've got. If I laughed on them, they believed it not. If I stopped, someone as dignified as me, someone with my status, if I stopped and shared a minute's fun, light-hearted, with them, they thought this was too wonderful for words. that it should happen to them. Perhaps it reminds us of the great privilege we have in knowing Christ, such a great one, the only representative of mankind other than Adam. Yet he's our friend. He stops with us. He deals with our private affairs. If I laughed on them, they believed it not. And the light of my countenance they cast not down. They loved that light. Whatever he said, whatever he taught, whatever he spoke, they remembered it. And then this last verse. Maybe he was the king, maybe Jobab is the Job. I chose out their way. Only surely the king of Eden could do that. Here is a man who is proactive. Here is a man whose character is determinative in the life of the nation. I chose out their way and sat chief. What does that mean if it doesn't mean what we're suggesting? And dwelt as a king in the army. Well, you can say he's only saying he was as a king. We don't know that he ever went out with his armies, but kings did. It can be interpreted that he dwelt as king in the army. He led them out. And this wonderful expression, I chose out their way and sat chief and dwelt as a king in the army, as one that comforteth the mourners. One of the hardest things that commanding officers ever have to do is to write home concerning somebody who's fallen in battle. It's a very important part of being a leader in war. And it's this that he's talking about. When his men died, he comforted those who fought with him. He comforted those who had lost him, the family at home. He dwelt as a king, but he dwelt as one that comforteth the mourners. He wasn't just interested in battle, he wasn't just interested in fighting, he wasn't just interested in the glory. He loved the responsibility and fulfilled it. Now, he's not bragging here. He's only saying he's missed it. And we can only conclude that he's been called to higher things. And I've suggested to you what those higher things are. And if it is that we say, when perhaps a minister like Nigel Lacey was taken away in his prime, he had so much to offer. It's not for us to decide. What does lie within our purview is to say that the Lord knows best, and his better purposes will be fulfilled by what he has done, however that may turn out. We know with regard to Job that better purposes were served, and we have to have that faith ourselves that when these things happen that we wouldn't wish and that seem to stop us doing the jobs that we want to do, that when those things happen, we're not to say, what's God doing? But to believe that we have been called to be faithful. Because we've been found faithful, he's counted us faithful, and now he's got another sphere where he wants us to be faithful, which is much more important, to hold fast in the fog, to hold fast in the dark, to trust where we cannot see. These things are so important. The next couple of chapters are the but now. And in fulfillment of what he says about his old days, when he comes to the end of chapter 31, there's nothing more to be said. And he says no more. May the Lord bless us and help us in his word. I've chosen this hymn, which you know I love, because it just shows the contrast. It's in a different sort of way. Simply that things do not always go on straightforwardly. And in verse 4, where the contrast is between the sweetness of a child and how the child turns out in man, it does say it may shake. Some children continue as they began well, but not all. But soon, too soon, the wintry hour of man's maturer age may shake the soul with sorrow's power and stormy passion's rage. You'll see that that is partly relevant to the sort of things that we've been thinking of.